I'm Janet Roper, and you're listening to the Reawaken Right Relationship Podcast. Welcome to this place where we have conversations about creating, nurturing, and sustaining right relationship with all sentient beings. This is one of my favorite times of the month because I get to give a big shout out to the new matrons and patrons that are over on my Patreon account. Now, I have to admit, I've been remiss with that, what with the move and then with the, shall we say, slightly less than acceptable internet connection here, which I believe got fixed today. Woohoo! Give me a shout out on that. So anyway, I'm back in the saddle and I would like to welcome Amy. And I would like to welcome Bonnie and thank you so much for your support because it's supporters like you who make my work sustainable, my online work sustainable. And I really appreciate that because it is important in this day and age that this information get out and that people realize what's going on and the value of making these connections that we have with our beyond human sentient beings. So, you know, this online work is really important. So thank you for that. And with Bonnie, I have to tell you that she is a lifelong friend, literally since the second grade. So we're talking decades that I've known Bonnie, and I got an email from her the other day with this surprise gift in it. So thank you, Bonnie, for that. It's really fun to see the support of people that I've known and to receive the support of people that I've known either lifelong, and for some of you, I don't know you at all, and to see that is also exciting. So thank you for the support that you have given me, for the continued support you give me for this podcast and for the online writings that I do. Welcome to this week's episode of Reawaken Right Relationship. This is episode number 38. And we're going to be covering some, I'm going to say it's kind of a touchy topic today. And that topic is going to be cats, indoor or outdoor. What are your thoughts about that? We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about what happens when you are connecting with the animals and you've done it just the way you've been taught to or just the way you think you should be doing it and you get that big nothing. What happens? Because you know what, folks, you're not alone. That's happened to me. We're also going to be talking about Patreon and what my goals are for the end of the year. And I'm going to be welcoming the new Patreon supporters. So folks, just get your favorite beverage, sit back, prop your feet up, and take a listen. When it comes to animal communication, there's a couple of pipe dreams that are floating in the air. Have you noticed this? One of the pipe dreams is that all animals are waiting with bated breath to have their chance to talk with us and to share their message for our benefit. And the second pipe dream is that learning to talk to the animals happens because of a single grand gesture on the human's part. Now, some of those grand gestures are perhaps taking that weekend class, reading the latest book, signing up for an online webinar. It has the ring of a fairy tale, doesn't it? Do these prescribed things and magic will happen. And you'll be talking with the animals in no time. But I got a question for you, folks. What happens when you do those prescribed things and the magic doesn't happen? I remember early on when I met my first animal communicator in real life. I had called her out of desperation because of a habit my dog Teddy had, peeing and pooping in the house. And I'll put that link in the episode notes so you can read more about Teddy's adventure. I was so impressed with the results that we had after working with the animal communicator that I decided to sign up for her weekend class. So that first morning, I'm sitting in the circle. I go to class. I'm excited. I'm nervous and I'm anxious and I can't wait for it to get started. The morning was spent with an introduction, which involved listening and taking notes. And that was followed by a break. And then it was time for our first exercise. The first question that we had, it was a basic one. It was to connect with the animal and see what she had to say. And the animal we were connecting with was that communicator's dog. I connected just like I was told to in the introduction, where I had so assiduously taken notes, and I'd been so proud of myself for listening and taking all those notes. I connected to the animal, and I got a really big nothing. After the exercise, it was time to share what we got. Everyone got these wonderful positive tidbits from the animal. And then it was my turn to share about that big nothing. It was humiliating. I felt guilt, I felt shame, and all those things that go along with not good enough. Decades later, as an animist, I am now able to look back on that formative experience with compassion. I have forgiven myself for all the unnecessary shit I piled up on myself due to what I thought was my failing, my not being good enough. There's a noxious underbelly when it comes to animal communication. And that is that we should be able to communicate with the animals and that the animals will always answer our question. And if we get that big nothing like I did, or if the answer is contrary to what we expect, then it's our fault. We've done something wrong. But you know what, folks? Those assumptions leave some big things out of the picture, some mighty big things out of the picture. They leave out the animal's own agency, the animal's own authority, and the nurturing and tending of right relationship. Learning to recognize and accept the animal's own agency and authority is a big thing with capital letters. And it doesn't happen overnight or happen because it's solely our intention to connect with another sentient being. When we start to recognize an animal's agency, we are going against what society and culture has taught and ingrained in us, what we carry in our genes, and what we often unconsciously think is we, the humans, have authority over all. And oh my stars, can't that be such a heavy load? So, okay, let's scurry on to the good news. Here's the good news. Changes can be made, changes that are made with consistency and connection, one baby step at a time. Changes like being present with the animal and waiting for her or him to tell you what the next step is, if there is even a next step. Being willing to sit in that uncomfortable space of big nothing, knowing this is what is and you're not responsible for it. Let me say that again. Being willing to sit in that uncomfortable space of the big nothing, knowing that is what is and you're not responsible for it. Recognizing when you slip into that ever so natural and usually well-meaning state of disregarding the animal's own agency. And knowing what your own boundaries are, what is yours to work with, and knowing simply what is and doesn't involve you. Those are big changes made by tiny steps. Making complex and cathartic changes, like I described above, are a joint effort. And you might say, well, why, Janet? Because we all sometimes need an outside eye to show where change is needed and to model those successful steps in making the changes and to reflect where and when old patterns keep popping up. And most importantly, why it's a joint effort is because we need somebody to celebrate and witness the good work as we're doing it. So what do I want you to take away from this? When you're connecting with the animals, be aware of yourself, how you're approaching them. Learn to notice when old patterns and habits pop up that block or control the natural flow of the conversation. Learn to notice, nurture, and tend these new steps that you are taking that recognize and acknowledge the animal's own agency. So if you would like someone to cheer you on with this, if you would like to talk more about this, if this is just on your mind and you've got some things that you just want to ask about, you know, let me know. Give me a discovery call, sign up for my discovery call, and let's see how I can help you. If you follow me, you know I've moved to a new home recently. Well, the good news is, yay, the move is over. Hot diggity dog, am I glad. Life has finally settled into a comfortable tempo for my dog Max, my cat Raven, and for me, so now I have more time to spend creating fresh new writings and podcasts for you. I create these resources and share them through my Patreon page so that you can strengthen your bond with our animal and other beyond human kin, so you are better able to easily and successfully support them, and so that you have tools for those times when you're facing things like, gee, I'm worried about my horse, she's been quieter than usual, and the vet can't find anything. Or maybe you were thinking, this hawk soars above our yard every day. I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder if he's finding the food that he needs here, or if there's something I can do for him or this place to make it healthier. Or maybe you're thinking, I miss my cat so much since she passed away. I'd love to talk with her and find out if she's doing okay. So, as I say, I share this on my Patreon page. And if you haven't been there, I invite you to go over there and scope it out. You'll find the link in the episode notes. Or just go to patreon.com/JanetRoper. It's an easy way for those who are interested in my work to view my online content and updates all in one place and to learn from that content. By contributing as little as $2 a month, patrons help me dedicate more of my time to creating these resources for you by helping to cover my overhead. And you know what, folks? Monthly support is important. A Kickstarter campaign or becoming an impromptu backer, which is like a one-time donation that I offer, that makes sense when there's a single big project that's in the works. I've used that approach many times in the past when doing festivals, workshops, and particularly when I participated in the 2007 American Music Awards Celebrity Gift Mart as an animal communicator. But now I have so many projects going on, not to mention the ideas that I want to develop for future projects and products, that working on them has become a full-time job. With monthly support from matrons and patrons, I can budget and plan further in advance and get more creative work done. Now, here's what I want to accomplish by the end of 2019. I want to purchase better recording equipment to better enhance the quality of the podcast. And I work now from a co-working space 3 times a week. As with any move, there are unforeseen circumstances that come up. And with this one, there's not enough broadband here at the apartment to support the online work that I do. So I'm now renting a co-working space. By the end of 2019, I want to purchase a new computer. I want to create an email course based on the foundational philosophy that everyone/everything is animated by consciousness and with their own agency. And this is already outlined and it's just waiting to be birthed. I'm really excited about that. By the end of 2019, I want to create an educational 3-month program that takes you from what the heck to I got this. When it comes to working, creating, and tending right relationship, and aids those who are called to participate in right relationship in an animistic way. And looking ahead to 2020, I'd like to consolidate my writings into a book that covers animal communication and animism. But truth be told, the cycle of fundraising for individual projects is wearing and it's exhausting, both for you and for me. And I can do so much more when I'm not spending all my time hustling for backing. Budgeting long-term is essential for any business, and for that, I need to know what income I can count on each month. To bring my goals to fruition, I need to be able to plan. These online projects are big, and if I know how much money I have coming in each month, I can budget for these and upcoming projects. Now, here are the facts. Right now, if only 40 of you contribute $2 a month, I will have exceeded my first goal on Patreon, which will allow me to upgrade the podcast. If 50 of you contribute just $5 a month, this will allow me to purchase the new podcast equipment, spend more time writing quality content, and go to the co-working space 3 times a week. And if 1,000 of you contribute $5 a month, I can do everything that I mentioned above and plan in a way that lets me build the online portion of my business, making it sustainable for the long run. Unlike a Kickstarter campaign or even becoming an impromptu backer, this monthly support is long-lasting, so the projects that I haven't even dreamed of yet can also become a reality in the future. So what's in it for you? Are there perks? You betcha. This is about ongoing, sustainable support, so I'm keeping the tiers simple, but still warranting of your financial backing of support. Tiers start as low as $2 a month, making this accessible for lots and lots of people. And of course, there are different levels of support with different benefits for each level. So just go over to my page on Patreon and you will see the tiers and you can decide which one works for you. If you find my work helpful, if an article or podcast has inspired or informed you or expanded possibilities in your world, consider this model of patronage. Becoming a matron or a patron is both deeply appreciated and a reasonable way to show your support. A contribution of $2 a month adds up to only $24 a year, and that's probably less than you spend on coffee in a month. In return, rest assured, I will be creating and producing new content, enthusiastically working to create the most honest and authentic content of which I am capable, because I know you are passionate about your support of animals and the other beyond human kin. Become a matron or a patron now, and I thank you. Your support makes my online work sustainable. I want to take a moment here to respond to a question that I'm asked a lot, whether that is by clients, whether that is online, whether that is discussions I get in with people in real life. And that question is, why shouldn't I let my cat outdoors to lead a more natural life? And I'm going to start off with some facts here. And some of these you folks will already know. First thing I'm going to say is those of us who are owned by cats have the responsibility to protect them to the best of our ability. It's kind of like a given, right? Fact number two is that there are about 90 million pet cats in the United States and an estimated 600 million worldwide. Now, those are the figures that I found of as of today, August 19th of 2019, and we know that's going to change, only grow higher in the future, right? Fact number three, which you may or may not know, is that unsupervised or off-lead outdoor cats can have their lifespan cut 50% or more just because they're outside, unsupervised, or off-lead. Did you know that? In general, outdoor cats have a lifespan of 2 to 5 years. Indoor cats regularly live 15-plus years, even getting up to 20-plus years sometimes. And unsupervised indoor-outdoor cats often don't make it past 5 years, and the ones that do are a very lucky exception. So why is that? Well, the outdoor cats get hit by cars. They get attacked by other animals, predators or other animals like dogs, and that also includes cats. They eat things that are toxic to them. They get used for target practice and killed by other humans. And they contract diseases like FIV and FELV. As a matter of fact, a study reported in the Royal Society Journal Biology Letters said that domesticated cats allowed outdoors, truthfully, are nearly 3 times as likely to become infected with pathogens or parasites than those who are confined to the inside, than to indoor cats. So that really gives us food for thought, doesn't it? What happens when we let our cats outside just because of nature? Another thing that I'd like to address is, and I don't know, you know, if you've been thinking, do I have an indoor cat, an outdoor cat? This is just to give you some food for thought. So have you thought about cats and their territory? Because outside cats can threaten inside cats too. Have you experienced that? You've got your indoor cat all just nice and cozy and happy, and there's that outside cat that walks by, and it's like all hell breaks loose on the inside. If an indoor cat leaves his scent and if an outdoor cat leaves his scent and threatens through windows, inside cats may feel the need to defend their space. Makes sense, right? It's their space. This can lead to misguided aggression, where they can take out their frustrations on other cats in the home. And the threat of an outdoor cat can lead an inside one to mark, setting them up for potential surrender if the issue isn't resolved. So think of that. If you've got outdoor cats in your neighborhood and they walk past your door, your window, and your cat sees them and starts marking, okay, what are the options that you have for that? Think about that. Outside cats are hardwired to compete with other cats for territory. That only makes sense. And that can lead to fighting, especially if either cat is intact. This exposes them to life-threatening viruses, not to mention abscesses and eye wounds, which can turn very serious. And think about this, too. A female kitten of 4 months can get pregnant, leaving her and her babies even more vulnerable. Fighting also sets up cats to be afraid of other cats. This can set them up not to have cat friends once they come inside. So in that, what seems at the very beginning to be a very simple question, well, why shouldn't I let my cat outdoors to lead a more natural life? There's a lot of thought that needs to go behind that. And that as responsible pet owners that we need to give honor to and think about this about our cats. So now I'm going to look at it from an animistic view, okay? with animism, we're all connected. We've all got that life force. We've all got that life connection. We're all sentient beings. We're all connected. So this is actually from one of my online connections, Lupa, who is a naturalist, pagan author, and artist. And she was having a conversation on the internet with someone who was trying to defend letting their cat roam free outside by saying that there were no endangered or threatened bird species in the woods that they live in. Now, before I go any further, I want to tell you to make sure that you check the episode notes, because I'm going to put Lupa's information in there. And she is definitely, she's a phenomenal artist, and her writing is definitely well worth the read. So as you're listening to this episode, or maybe afterwards, do make sure that you check out Lupa's website. So anyway, this was Lupa's response. She started off by saying, okay, let me explain something from a big picture ecological perspective as someone who has done a lot of species surveying and habitat restoration and who also lives in the woods. You are falling prey to the shifting baseline problem, which essentially means that your idea of a normal amount of wildlife for your area is going to be very different from what was normal 100 years ago or even 200 years ago, so on and so forth. And the more we move the baseline of what's normal, the more we lose sight of what an ecosystem was like before we went in and damaged it. Okay, let me repeat that. That bears repeating. The more we move the baseline of what's normal, the more we lose sight of what an ecosystem was like before we humans went in and damaged it. We shouldn't be looking at wildlife populations as they are now and considering them the standard to strive for, because these populations that are, they're struggling a lot more than you think. So, and again, she's addressing this woman online, okay? She was telling this woman or this person, what you consider a lot of birds is almost certainly lower than what a lot of birds was in the same place a century ago. Sure, maybe your local ecosystem hasn't seen what you see as significant drop in wildlife population. However, just because a species hasn't been marked as endangered or threatened by a government entity, which, by the way, tends to be woefully behind the reality of things because of bureaucracy and lobbyists, doesn't mean that it isn't in decline. In fact, a large portion of bird species worldwide are in decline, even ones considered common. This is due to a combination of a whole bunch of factors ranging from drastic habitat loss to pollution and to, yes, predation by invasive species like cats. You can't single out any one of these as the reason, and I'm putting air quotes around the reason. It's the fact that they're acting like a 1-2 punch that's making it so damned hard for wildlife to adapt to the many ways in which humans have really messed things up so badly. It's like when you get your rent raised by 40%, and I love this analogy she makes, to the wildlife. It's like when you get your rent raised by 40% and your car dies and you lose a third of your hours at work and your significant other loses their job entirely and ends up with a chronic medical diagnosis that's going to need expensive medication for the long term. And all of this happens in 1 week, and guess what? Next week it's going to just be worse. So your local birds are part of more widespread species whose genetic diversity is shrinking due to individual populations going locally extinct. And yes, that's very important because the rate of species extinction and endangerment has risen in the past 100 years, and it's only going to raise faster, which means that more species are going to edge towards endangerment, including the ones that you think are okay, especially as climate change hits us harder and makes it exponentially more difficult for all species to adapt to rapid changes in their environment. So we need to treat our local wildlife as though they are precious, irreplaceable reservoirs of biodiversity and genetic resources, because that's exactly what they are. And the more people are I don't care, I don't give a crap about the effects on their local population of a given species, the more likely it is that that species is going to experience greater fragmentation as more and more pockets of individuals go locally extinct and the remaining animals are more isolated from each other. Maybe it's not obvious now, but it will be. And we have the power to do something about it before it becomes a problem. So look past your own woods and pay attention to the overall pattern that we're all a part of. You and your cat aren't isolated, and neither are you and the wildlife. So doesn't that give a lot to think about? Have you ever considered that from that point of view? I know that I haven't, because when I read what Lupa had written online, and frankly, I went back and read the whole conversation from everybody that was going on. If I can find it, I'll put the link in the episode notes. But it really opened my eyes, because I'm going, damn, I've never thought of it like that before. Even more specifically, I can remember when I was living in Minnesota, so we're just talking a few years ago, and I was living in that small town southwest of the Twin Cities, that there were all kinds of feral cats, and I had, you know, a little cat corner in my yard, and I had a feed for them, and I had set up so that in the wintertime they can go into like this cage that I had set up to keep them warm and, you know, they would be safe and everything. And I remember the guy, my next door neighbor, and in all honesty, I thought he was just, you know, like this old crabby guy, because that's the way he came over to me at the time. Was, and I hadn't been there at the house for too long, you know, just basically long enough to get my little cat shack set up. And he came over and he goes, those damn cats of yours are eating my birds. And I'm going, they're not my cats. And he goes, well, you're feeding them. And I'm going, well, yes, I am, because, you know, they're strays and they need food. And he goes, they're eating my birds. And I didn't understand it at the time. So years later, I understand it. So now what I'm finding for myself in particular is when I start to understand something from a different point of view, or in a different way, or that deepens the relationship that I have with that animal, or the animistic relationship that I have with any sentient being, I need to respond at the level that I am now. So if I were to do the same thing again, let's say, I love Doctor Who, so let's say I'm a Time Lord and I can go back in time and I can, you know, change things. That's what I would do. I would do things differently because I understand now what that man was saying. So I would love to hear your comments on this. Let's get a conversation going, shall we? Here on Anchor FM, you can just call in and leave me a message and I'll get it. Or go to my website, janetroper.com. And, you know, hit the contact button and leave me a message that way. Let's get to talking about this, shall we? Okay, so now that we've talked about what can happen if you let your domesticated animal outside, and I know that there are people with heartfelt motives on both sides of this, I'm just asking that you consider what I have to say. Because, again, it goes back to us being caretakers of the cats and to doing the best that we can for them, right? So all I'm doing is asking you to consider this information that I'm giving out to you. So people will say that they honestly feel that they are giving the best environment for their cat that they can, because cats like to be outdoors. Well, you know what? We can provide rich environment for indoor cats too, because cats don't need to be outdoors to live an enriched life. Now, true confession here, none of my cats have been outdoor cats, and it has been because I've lived in cities or close to cities, and then when I was living in the country, I was living in the country, and there were predators. And the cat that I have now, Raven, he'd just as soon be inside. I mean, he likes to be by the window to watch outside, so Raven's got his own space, actually more than one space, so he can watch outside, but he doesn't like going outside. That's not his cup of tea. So please remember that cats do not need to be outdoors to live an enriched life. As responsible cat people, because you know we're all owned by the cats, right? We think that we own them, but they own us. They do need to have a healthy and happy environment. And with what I've said before, to me, my way of thinking anyway, keeping them indoors and providing them a rich environment also provides them a healthy and happy lifestyle. So yes, okay, humans, let's get to the point here. It might take a little bit of work on our part, but aren't the cats worth it? What we can do is we can set up a safe and interesting environment indoors that provides all the stimulation of outdoors in a safe, fun indoor setting. Okay, so number one, find a perch for your cat. Cats love to be high. They love to look outdoors. So if you can make a resting shelf, if you've got a shelf, if there's some kind of high perch by a window. One of my cats, Billy, loved to be on top of the refrigerator. And on top of the refrigerator, he could see everything that was going on in the kitchen. Plus, in that place where we lived, we had a big window there in the kitchen, and he could look outside, and he could see what was going outside from the safety of being perched on top of the refrigerator, because it was the highest place he could go. So you can also look for commercially available shelving. And there's some that's made to attach to window frames. You can find them at your local pet store. You know, you can find them at Amazon.com. You can find them at garage sales. Now, if you find something at a garage sale, do make sure that it's still in good condition. And me personally, finding something at a garage sale, I would be cautious about that simply because of the scent of other cats on it. When I'm getting something from my crew, I buy it new simply because the scent of other animals on it can be disturbing to them. So giving your cat a resting perch so that they can look outside, that's a wonderful idea. And they can do that for hours. How many people say their cats watch TV when they are looking at the outdoors through a window? Are you one of those? Toys. All right, we can get all kinds of different toys to stimulate the cat's brain. You can get those big expensive games that appeal to their instinct. You can take, and I've done this with Raven, just take foil, aluminum foil, crumpled it up, and tossed it out for him to chase. Of course, there's catnip. You can get bags and boxes of catnip. You can get some chase toys. You can get some toys where it's like a fishing line and it's got something at the end of it and you wiggle it for the cat. And they just have a fun time getting that. You can get those tunnels for the cats to run through. My cat Billy loved that. He had one and he loved it. Raven liked it, but Raven liked to be on the outside trying to catch Billy as Billy was running on the inside. So there's all kinds of options you can get when you have these toys. And what I think is really fun is watching to see the games that the cats make up for themselves. Now, one thing that I would be careful about is, you know, those red dot thingies that you can get. I would be careful of that simply because when I was talking to, I don't remember her name right now, cat expert, Darlene, I can't remember her last name. And if I find it, I will put that in the show notes. But anyway, she was talking, and she was a behaviorist with the cats, a cat specialist. And she was talking about how that game can cause OCD with the cats. And, you know, we're looking to enrich their lives, not to create OCD. So just be aware of that red flashlight button thingy that you can play with the cats. You can also rotate their toys. You know, like think of yourself when you were a kid. How much fun was it when your parents pulled out, you know, something that you've had before and you haven't played for a while? It's like, whoa, I got new ideas to do with this, to play with this. And that happens with the cats too. So in the rotation, you know, the old toys can be in a chest or something where the cats can't see them. Or maybe you've got one of those like baskets that you can put them in, and you can put that in a place where the cat won't see it, and you just pull it out upon occasion. That's really a lot of fun for the cats because they think they're new because they haven't seen them in a while. Also think about suspending the toys from the tables or from door handles. And I know I've got a lot of mileage out of that. Raven had this one, I think it was a fish. And he loved it so much, and I got tired of playing with it. So what I would do is I suspended it from the refrigerator door handle, and he would be there for hours just batting around and playing with it. And, you know, he'd eventually get it off, and then he'd go hide it, and then I'd have to go find it. And I think that was his way of making up a new game with it. So we talked a little bit earlier about the screened windows. Yep, you know, the cats do love those, but do be careful about a couple of things. The cats love them because they have access to the smells and the sounds of the outdoors while they are in the safety of their home. I have never, this is not an exaggeration, because right now I'm going through all the cats that I've had. I've never had a cat that's wanted to be more outdoors because they've had the enticement, so to speak, of that open screen window. Now, that's going to be different with different folks. You know, each cat and their wants and desires are going to be different. So it's up to us to look at what's going on and to evaluate each individual cat differently. Okay. But I can honestly say that I've never had a cat that wanted to be outdoors just because the screen window was open. So what you do need to be sure of is that the screen is secure and that they can't push it out. I was cat sitting with one of my friends, oh my gosh, this has been years ago, in Minneapolis, and they had gone on a camping trip, and I was in charge of the cat, and or the cats, and they'd left the screen open, and I didn't realize it was loose. And the cat pushed its way out, jumped from the second floor or fell from the second floor and from an apartment in Minneapolis and, you know, was just kind of hanging around. And I could not find that cat. I felt so bad. So be sure that the screen windows, the screen doors, that they're secure, that the cats can't push them out. Also, make sure that they don't scratch them, because I did have one cat who scratched an opening in the screen door, I think it was, and was trying to get through there. But, you know, got that fixed, and he just learned that he needed to stay inside. So if you have that screen window, don't leave your cat unattended. Make sure that you're watching them. And then, you know, litter box, we're going to be talking cats, we're going to be talking litter box, right? So make sure you keep the clean litter box so that they have a clean bathroom. And, you know, that's going to reduce any kind of inappropriate peeing or pooping that might go on in your house. Now, some people, you know, I talked a little bit earlier about having supervised on lead time for your cat outside. And, you know, that's a good thing. Get a lead for your cat. And it takes them a while to get used to it. A lead is like a leash and a harness, and it's for supervised trips outdoors where you're with them. So basically, instead of walking your dog, you're walking your cat. Now, it takes them, I had one for one of my cats, and it took him probably 4 or 5 times to get used to it. Once he got used to it, it was like, whoa, this is really cool. I can be outside. And, you know, I can enjoy all these things outside. And he never wanted to run. He was content with staying at the length of the leash. So consider getting a leash for your cat and taking them outside. A little bit of training goes a long way. And then the other thing that you consider, and this is really popular, and if I had more cats, I would seriously consider doing this, and that is to have a catico, or a catio, sometimes it's called. It's like a cat patio. And having that all screened in, all sides, including the top, make sure that the bottom is safe so that they can't, you know, wiggle out from the bottom in some way. And that gives them the best of both worlds. You know, they are safe. Predators cannot get to them. They cannot get to the predators, yet they can enjoy their time outside. And if you, you know, really want your cat to be outside, this is a safe way for them to be outside. So all in all, folks, with this topic that I'm talking about on this episode, it's to get you to thinking outside of the box, so to speak, and to get you to thinking of different ways and, you know, to keep your cat, them have an enriched life and having them be healthy and safe without turning them loose entirely outdoors on their own. So yes, I know there are going to be people who are going to write letters and are not going to be happy with this. And actually, I encourage you to write those respectful letters, because I really do want to learn more from, you know, your perspective and how you are thinking about this. When we get a conversation going like this, this is when we can start making change and when we can start learning more about our animal friends, in this case, our cat friends, and also learning more about having animistic relationships with them. Do you love what you're hearing on this podcast? I sure hope so. And if you are loving it, I ask that you show support by liking it and leaving a comment or review on whatever platform you are listening to this on. You can also show your support by sharing it with your friends and family. And I so appreciate your help. Thank you. Hey folks, I'm going to invite you to espresso your gratitude for this podcast. If you love listening to this podcast, as I listen to so many podcasts, I'm kind of a podcast nerd. I always think that the podcast is for free because I'm listening to it for free, right? Well, you know what? To consume, yes, podcasts are free, but to create and produce, no, they are not free. Because creating and producing podcasts, it's a labor of love for me, but it's still a labor because there's writing, researching, providing commentary, providing community, contacting guests, interviewing, recording, sound editing, creating the script, creating the social media, promoting. Did I forget anything? Oh yeah, I did. There's also website and internet expenses. And all of this to provide content and a podcast that hopefully inspires or informs you and leads you to expanded possibilities in the world. How about showing your support by contributing the equivalent of one cup of coffee? That contribution would be greatly appreciated and a great way to show your backing of the podcast that I create. To espresso your gratitude for this podcast, the easiest way to do that is to go over to my Patreon account, which you will find at Janet Roper on Patreon. I think you'll enjoy the podcast, Everyday Animism, that I co-host with two exceptional women, Kelly Harrow of SoulfulIntentArts.com and Brenda Schnabel of SoulfulFocus.com. In this podcast, we explore all things animism, particularly how animism impacts everyday life. You can find it here at Anchor or on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you have enjoyed hearing this, remember to subscribe to the podcast on Anchor or iTunes. And if you would like to follow more of my work, please visit www.janetroper.com.